It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You are listening to Any Given Sunday, a part of the Dead End Podcast Network. Please subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Spotify, Google, and all other podcasting services. Please make sure you check out Dead End Hip Hop, Dead End Sports, Dead End Gaming, Is the Mic Still On, Chris Platt's Strictly Hip Hop and Hoops Talk, and a host of other shows on our podcast network. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show. You are listening to Any Given Sunday for Sunday, August 22nd, 2021. I am your host, Manny Brown, joined as always by my co-host, Josh Rodriguez. Josh, what is up?
What's going on, man? How are you? It's been a couple weeks, but that's our summer schedule. People deal
that's
with it.
That's our summer schedule, man. It's our summer, not so summer hiatus. So yeah, sure. Hopefully everybody out there in the podcast universe is doing okay, doing all right, enjoying their summer, staying cool or warm or safe, depending on where you are in the region. Northeast is going to be hit with a hurricane. So hopefully you guys are staying. Yeah. The fact that like the Northeast, both of us being from the Northeast, like the fact that the Northeast is getting a hurricane. I know Sandy and all that, but just like, it still just doesn't, in my brain, it just doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense to me either, but it's starting to become like
it's a new normal.
Yeah, it's like a semi-normal thing now.
Yeah, it's normal now. It's like fucking New York's going to have gusting winds and rain, sideways rain and shit. Like
it's like
August.
Those freaking movies that were like where the world's ending. That's really what it's like.
Well, depending on who you ask, the world is ending. So yeah, it's probably.
I'm one of those people, man. I do not have hope for civilization. I'm being serious, bro. I'm at a point now where it's just like I'm becoming a nihilist at this point, like 1,000%. I can't do this anymore. Yeah, I can't.
I try to be positive. I try to be positive, but man, there's things that happen. This is what happens when you are on social media too much, man. And per our careers, we have to kind of be on social media. I mean, it's kind of be pointless if we're doing this and not on social media in some form or fashion. But yeah, man, when you're on social media, it's like you literally just see the terrible ills of the world, and you're just like, yeah.
Doom scrolling is real.
For real.
It's a real thing.
But that's why I always tell people, like, yo, you got to take a break from social media sometimes. Like, if you don't absolutely have to be on there, just stay off. Or avoid conflict on social media. Or avoid shit, the trappings of social media.
But it's hard. That's impossible. Do you know how hard that is for me to do?
I know. It's easier said than done, for sure.
Like it is. It is. Where I'm like, oh my God, these people cannot be serious.
Yeah. Oh, I use Saturday and Sunday as like my break days, like where I only go on social media if it's just for memes and funny videos and shit like that. Political stuff, even sports debates. Like it's at a point where sports debates become toxic. Like I just lay off all that shit. Like basically I give myself like Friday evening from like 6 to basically 11:59 on Sunday. I'm just like, yeah, I'm done. No breaks. Obviously, it's easier said than done. Of course, with our jobs and stuff, it's hard to avoid. But yeah,
I'm a doom scroller, man. Like I was in Miami for a little bit, and like literally for like 2 hours one day, I was on the couch just.
And that's where they get you too.
Just like Florida COVID cases, Florida, right. DeSantis. Right. Like I'm just
you're
like,
you're on the couch, you're on the shitter. You know, you're in bed at night. I'm at 2 a.m. in the morning,
just getting mad.
Doom,
just
yeah,
getting just mad.
Yeah,
we got a good morning comment here. Good morning.
Good morning, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Good morning. It'll be morning here soon in about 3 hours. Yeah. But yeah, so it's crazy, man. It's crazy that, you know, you know, social media basically captures how you feel about the world. But yeah, you know, I try to stay relatively away from it. I'm not saying I'm successful at it. I'm just saying that I try to, you know, whether that happens or not, you know, what's a good thing? Do not get in political debates online anymore. I used to get so upset. And my wife would laugh at me. She's like, you don't fucking know these people. Like, why are you like, it's because it's so unfair. And then it's like, I just stopped. I gave up. I don't do it anymore. Well, I don't.
That's why I had to get off Facebook, was because I did know those people. So like, I can argue with people on Twitter all day, because at the end of the day, I don't know you. And I can be like, oh my God, like your views are so abhorrent. Like, but at the end of the day, I don't know you. You don't really affect my life personally. But like Facebook, I'm literally arguing with people I went to high school with that I legitimately just like loved as human beings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can't believe you guys have these viewpoints. And I'm not talking about viewpoints on taxes and deregulation. I'm talking like, oh, like you don't think my friend's life matters. Okay. Right. That's wild. That's wild. No,
you know what's the craziest thing? And obviously I'm not the first person to make this joke, but Facebook has really showed us who's really racist and who's not. Like, it's crazy. Yes. Like, that's like the greatest impact Facebook will have. Like, besides connecting people and all that, like showing you who you thought was cool and it really has like some really shitty, abhorrent views. Like, yeah, it's like
Facebook.
Like, bro, like, I'm just like, I knew you. Like, we hung out, like we chased broads together, and now it's like you're a fucking MAGA person, like, and a hardcore MAGA person at that. Like,
yeah, that's crazy. Proud boy.
Yeah. Don't get me started on that. But yeah, no, I gave up arguing online, man. It's much better for it. So right now, if I'm on Facebook, I am on Facebook, but I'm on there for my family, friends, close friends that I already know that I fuck with, regardless, and that's it. And I just. You know, sometimes I stir the pot on Facebook, but I kind of just throw a grenade and see where it lands, and then I'm just out of dodge. Fuck that shit. Like with this Afghanistan shit. Oh yeah, I did that a bunch this week.
But even that, like, I definitely matured. Like, for instance, like the Jimmy Dore video we had, like all those comments are about ripping me, and like I've been able to like look at them and just go and laugh. Like, just kind of take a step back and go, okay, like, if that's how you feel, that's how you feel.
Josh, the normie Democrat.
Yeah.
Apparently,
but like maybe 5 years ago, I would be in the comments like,
yeah.
Not anymore.
Nah, just I don't understand it, man. I get it now. I don't understand celebrity. Like, I don't understand KD. Like, Kevin, please. Sense like them. you have to have
player of our generation. Like, you have to have some.
Like, you're going back and forth with some dude online that has like 10 people following. And I'm not even like, oh, you got 10 people following. Like, but like literally these people that have no avatars that you're just going back and forth with for what reason other than Thunder just your own
672471.
Like, right. Like, come on, man. Stop, Kevin, you have to have better things. Kevin, go build a homeless shelter. Like, go do something productive with your time. then to do whatever it is you do with your 1300 burner accounts, apparently. It's crazy. But yeah, man, how's life? How's everything? How's everything over at the job?
Everything's good. I can make an announcement pretty soon, man. You know what I'm talking about, but I can't say it publicly
yet. Yes.
So projects are in the works. Basketball season is around the corner, which is a hint at what I will be doing. And, you know, in about a week or two, I'll be able to tell you exactly what that is. But work is getting very busy right now, which is a good thing. Busy is good. So how about
busy
you?
Busy is good. Busy is good. Same, man. Yeah. Same. Trying to sell a house. Trying to get a house finished building. Podcasting. You know, the usual. You know, I'm a very busy man. The life, you know.
How's MLB, bro?
MLB Bro's good. MLB Bro's good. I'll probably be on again with Debatables this week. Again, shout out to Mark Gray, you know, my co-host on there. And
yeah, I'll be making me laugh,
just
man.
Just doing different things, man. Just doing different things, man. Trying to stay active, trying to stay busy. Shout out to the boys at the Vanguard, Zach and Gavin. I was supposed to be on this week again to talk about Afghanistan. I'm becoming like a weekly correspondent on there.
Yes, sir. That's
a good thing. No, shout out to them, man. Those guys. Come on over. We need all of you guys as you can. But shout out to Gavin and Zach. They were supposed to have me on this week again, but it's been such an insane week with work, my day job, and then of course podcasting and stuff that I couldn't swing it. But definitely, I'll try to be on this week to provide another perspective on our main topic today. But yeah,
let me know. Shout out to your last appearance. It was.
Oh, and we are planning. if we do have some Vanguard watchers and listeners or whatever, we are planning a mashup, an Any Given Sunday Vanguard mashup. That'll be fun.
Any Given Vanguard.
Any Given Vanguard. That's exactly. Yeah, exactly. Any Given Vanguard. We might even have to merge. You know, we'll get our boy Clement. Shout out to Clement to merge the logos or something. Like we'll do it. We'll do it. You know, we'll do it. But no, we're working with that. Something in the works. My hope is something around October, November, where there's an opening in the schedule for both sides, obviously, and then we can just kind of have fun. Yeah, close to some election stuff, and you know, just in general, just shoot the shit for a couple hours. But yeah, that'll be fun. That'll be fun. So we're working on that. So stay tuned for that. But yeah, man. Other than that, man, just. You know, of course, all the stuff I do with Dead End. I mean, just staying busy. Just staying busy, man. So, yeah, I can't complain. I would say selling a house is probably taking up most of my time, but you already know my feelings on that. Listen, selling a house has made me hate people more than I already hate people. I hate people. I really hate people. Like, it's just, yeah. You'll never realize how dumb and annoying and vain some people are until you actually try to sell them something, especially a house. Like, yeah, it amazes me the things people say and do and comment on and whatever. But it is what it is, man. But no, I'm good.
You want to talk about it?
Oh, no, I don't, because I've had a good day. Like, honestly, like, I had a bunch of showings today. For those who don't know, I'm selling my house. We upgraded our home. We bought a new house, and we're getting it built. From the ground up. And obviously that's stressful enough because they're pissing me off. Shout out to Richmond Homes. They're pissing me off for just being incompetent. So I'll leave them alone this week. They haven't done anything to piss me off this week. But no, man, just trying to sell a house. We thought that this was a good market for sellers. It was definitely a seller's market. And for some reason, the seller's market skipped me because I'm having like the worst luck ever trying to sell my house. And it's like, full disclosure, like, my house is okay. Like, I have a decent house. You know, only thing is I don't have a big backyard. And apparently for where I'm at selling my house at the price that I'm selling it, which is $600K, you apparently need a backyard or people won't fuck with you. Like, it's to the point where literally, yeah, bro, I've shown you the feedbacks we get.
I've seen some of it, but have you, so do you have anybody else in your neighborhood that has recently purchased a home that you can talk to or has sold their home that you can talk to?
Yes. Two houses down, a lady in February.
And this is the same thing. We needed a backyard.
No. That's the crazy part, right? So
you need to get two white friends to pose. You need to do that, man. I've seen this. I'm sorry. This has happened a few times where black people have gotten their white friends to stand in as if there was their homes. You take out all your family pictures, you replace it with their family pictures, and that shit will sell tomorrow.
You know, the sad part is you're probably right. That's kind of, you know, we do, like, when I leave, because sometimes I'm like, before I used to like try to.
I don't give a fuck, man. I've seen it too many times. I've seen too many stories. I mean, there's no data, no studies on it.
There's no data. It's one of those things that you can't really even.
It's like anecdotal stuff I'm reading, but like, listen, man, like, I would try it, like, at this point.
Listen, there's times where like I've left the house for a showing and the people will get here. That's another thing, by the way. Like, I don't understand why people schedule an appointment to see a house at a certain time and then show up 30 minutes prior to the time. Like, why do that? That's awkward as fuck. It's already an awkward situation where I'm leaving my house to so some random stranger can walk around it, but then it's like you show up all early and shit, so like, it's weird. So
why can't you be there?
I don't think there's anything that you can't be there. It's more of like, it's one of those like unwritten rules type of thing. It's just like, it's better if the owner's not there, that type of thing. Cause you're not private selling it. So it's, you know, there's a process and there's a realtor that's going to show them the house and that sort of thing. I don't think there's like a, you must not be there or you'll be sued type of thing. Nah, it's just more of a common courtesy customs type of thing.
You got to get out your own damn house in order for someone to look at it.
Yeah. And me with three kids all under the age of 7.
Oh my God, that's brutal.
And wrap them up and also keep my house clean and show ready, basically like a museum. Anybody that has kids will agree with this. It's fucking nearly impossible. But Yeah, man, it's just stressful because it's like, it's stuff that's like out of your control. It's like the yard is the biggest thing. And like, we don't, the biggest thing with our backyard, it's like, A, it's not big. I mean, it's decent enough, but it's not big. And we don't really have any grass back there. It's just dirt and gravel. And like, apparently, I'll say it, some of these white folks are just like, no, we need a yard. We need a, like, we need a football field. We need basically like, we need Allegiant Stadium back there. Like, it's essentially
That's the feedback you've been getting every
day. It's essentially the feedback that we've been getting, man. Like, yo, honestly, and like, everything is like, oh, the house is perfect. Space-wise, it's amazing. Price is just right. Awesome house. Yeah, it doesn't have backyard. Like, okay. Like, we literally can have like Trump Tower style gold toilets in every bathroom and like diamond floors. And people are like, yeah, that's great. But yeah, it doesn't have a backyard. Like, okay, great. So, amen. Yeah. It is what it is. I'm not trying to – it's first world problems. And for anybody who's listening or watching, it's first world problems. I'm not trying to stress about it. I get it. You know, there's way worse shit going on in the world.
How dare you buy a house?
You know, how dare – yeah, exactly. I'm blessed. I'm blessed and fortunate enough where I'm in a position, you know, financially and career-wise to be able to not only buy one house but to buy another and sell one. So – I don't lose sight of that, but yes, it is very stressful. It is very stressful. So, yeah, man, it's crazy. I mean, we get these, you know, just to wrap up on this point, we get these, you know, my wife has the Windermere app. That's where our leasing or our realty company is. And, you know, she gets the feedbacks, you know, our realtor reaches out to whoever's seen the house, 'cause he knows who comes to see the house. You know, so, you know, let's say Josh comes to see the house. So, you know, the realtor, my realtor, will reach out and say, hey, you know, you saw the house today. What did you think? Are you interested? And, you know, they'll basically leave a feedback they'll leave a feedback through him. Or sometimes they'll go into their app and leave a feedback there. And it gets back to our realtor, which shares it with us and it's all app based, as everything is in 2021. Right. So, like, of course, we get all of these feedbacks and it's just the same thing. It's like, you know, but sometimes it's like dumb shit. Like, Oh, it doesn't have enough parking.
Like, what? You have a driveway?
Yes, we have a driveway and a two-car garage. We don't have enough parking. Like, what the fuck are you trying to park? A fucking semi? Like, what the fuck are you parking here? Like, and like the house across the street from us, our neighbors across the street, like they have a fucking big ass RV. And they fit that shit in their lot, and their lot is just as big. their lot is just as big as our house, and yeah, they make do just fine. So I don't know what the hell this dude was talking about. We had one lady that was looking at the gutters. Like, I've never met a woman in my life. I've been on Earth for 34 and a half years. I've never met a woman in my life that cared so much about gutters. But this fine young lady here cared about the gutters and, you know, it's just like, you know, and I have a Ring camera. So sometimes I'll go in there if I'm bored and I'll spy, like, I'll see who's at the house or whatever. And like, I saw her like messing around with the gutters and like, I can hear she's telling her husband like, oh, the gutters look kind of, you know, and the husband was like, no, they're good. They're just sturdy, good gutters. And like, yeah, she's just like, no, like, what the fuck? Gutters? Like, literally gutters. Like, okay. Wonderful. Gutters. Got it.
At that point, she was just finding something to.
And that's what, like, my realtor, my brother who's in real estate, they say the same thing. Like, a lot of times when you sell a house, you'll get some of this shit. Like, you'll get people that, you know, just literally show up.
For whatever reason, she didn't want to.
And I get it. But it's angering because it's like you wasted 30 minutes of my day that I could have been at home. And not to mention, like, people don't understand, like, that's time that I have to leave my house. I have to take my kids with me. We have to basically ride around or go to Costco or do whatever just to buy time. And you're basically window shopping or just fucking, you know, we've had people come and say, oh, great house. It's just too expensive. You knew the price before you.
Right.
Like you applied to see the house.
Getting into.
Like, A, my house is market value. B, like, you knew the price. So it's not like I'm just, you know, showing you something. Like, you know, I mean, it's not like I raised the price when you got here. Like, no, you knew the price as you set up a viewing. So it's yeah. Yeah. But again, first world problems, I'm blessed. So
you are.
I try to keep that outlook. At least publicly, anyway. Privately, I'm cursing out people. Death to Whitey, public or privately.
Oh my
God. No, I'm just kidding. But no, No, but to your point, you might be right, because like a lot of times too, like I'll leave the house and like the people that are coming to see the house will be waiting outside, and you know, sometimes you get a look like, oh, I wonder if they're tenants. I'm like, oh, the black folks are leaving. They're tenants, right? Like I had somebody ask me the other day. It's like, oh, you guys live here? Like, yeah, I live here.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, you own the house? Yep.
Yes.
I own the house. Like, it's crazy. I know. Black people actually own homes. Yeah. No, crazy. It's crazy. I know, right? I know. I know. We don't all just live in projects. I know.
I'm telling you. I'm telling you.
No, sadly, in 2021 that we still even have to have this conversation.
Yeah. You're not going to be there. Just leave the house, meet like 15 minutes early before they get there.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
For sure. For sure. But. Yeah. So I it's something that I will definitely take under advisement for sure. Yeah. For sure. For sure. Yeah, man. But let's get into it, man. Enough about life and houses and all that other stuff. And where you want to start? You want to start with Afghanistan first? Or you want to start with
Afghanistan.
My lowly Mets? No, you know what? Let's start with the Mets. Let's start with the Mets.
Because okay,
let me just get it out of the way so I can focus all of my ire and my focus on Afghanistan. Listen. The Mets season is over.
Oh my God, is it?
It's over. Oh, I know there's some Mets fans online that are still have hope.
Who? You know, the next, who are these Mets fans?
No, I mean, Pete Alonso has an audience. That's all I'm going to say. He has an audience. Well, no, there's Pete some knows. Mets fans, but there's some Mets fans
Pete
out there.
Does listen, know.
Pete, he Pete does knows. Know. He knows. And he knows. He knows. He doesn't just believe. He knows. But listen, there are Met fans out there that are old. And listen, God bless them. I'm not trying to bash them. God bless them. I wish I could be that positive. And I could wish I could be like, no matter, like we could be 35 games out on September 20th and be like, yeah, we're going to make the playoffs this year. I wish I could have that level of positivity. I don't. Not in sports. Not in life. I just don't. I'm sorry. That being said, yeah. It's over, man. It's over. I mean, listen, I know our next 17 games are against, after the Giants this week, our next 14 games are against the Nationals and the Marlins. And we should fare pretty well, but I just
13-1 and even have a shot
at the fucking least. And then of course the Braves are playing their toughest stretch. They're playing the Yankees twice. Okay. They're playing the Dodgers, Giants. So I get the reason for hope, I guess. No, but it's not happening. It's not happening. It's done. It's done.
They won today.
Yeah, they won today. Congrats. Yay. Yeah. It's like, too little, too late. Javi Baez comes back and the season's over. Thanks. Great. Thanks.
You know what's bad? When I had a choice between to go to a – this is going to sound terrible, but I had a choice between going to Sparks game and a Mets game, and I was like, let me go to see the Sparks.
Wow.
That sounds awful. I know that
I'm
sounds
not even
horrible.
Offended as a Mets fan. Like, why would but you
like,
go
I was like,
why
no,
would
I
you go
to,
watch
I
the Mets? Why would you go watch J.D. Davis strike out at nothing but fastballs? Why would you go – why would you go watch Pete Alonso strike up at high
my,
cheese?
My thought process night. Was it was Friday night. I was like, you know what? Got off of work early today. I live – 5 minutes one direction is Dodger Stadium, five-minute Uber ride. In the other direction, I could walk to the Staples Center in about 10 minutes max. Mm-hmm. I was like, you know what? Sparks, Mets. I want to see some WNBA action. Screw the New York Mets. I'd rather watch the Sparks.
Yeah. Listen, this weekend was just – I was done with it this weekend, man. This was the first weekend that the Mets have been playing that I've just said – and I was home all weekend for the most part. And, outside of Saturday afternoon, I did some things. That I just didn't dedicate any attention, any effort, any energy to the Mets. Like, I was just like, I can't do it. Friday night, I did. I lied. Friday night, eighth inning, bases loaded. They finally got what's his face out of the game because he was just dominating us. And I believed. I was there. I just like Pete asked me to. I believed, and I was there. I was ready.
But you didn't
and
know,
of
man.
Course,
you didn't
yeah,
know.
You're right. I didn't know.
You didn't take that extra step. You're supposed to know. You were questioning
it. Yeah. Yeah.
Listen. That's on you. That's on the Mets.
They lured me back in. And then, of course, J.D. Davis does what J.D. Davis does, which is do nothing in meaningful games. And, yeah, that's it. That, off the Mets go into the night and they lose two. And that's the most egregious part of this entire skid that the Mets have been on, basically. this month-long skid that the Mets been on. Outside of the Sunday night game against the Dodgers last week, where they got killed 14-4 or something like that, every game has been like three runs or less, like literally been close games, nip and tuck battles right. that have come down right to the final at bats or final innings. And we just can't get a goddamn hit with guys on base. I mean, this is the worst offensive team I've seen in 20 something years of watching baseball. Like, this team is that bad offensively.
And they shouldn't be. That's the frustrating.
That's the frustrating part. Like, they should not be, you know, because there's guys on this team that at the very least have the potential. And that's probably the problem too, is like, they have a lot of unknowns on this team too, though. Talented guys, but a lot of guys that outside of 1 year haven't really done it on a consistent basis year in, year out. Like Jeff McNeil, I love the guy, but outside of 2019, like, what has he really done? He came on late last year, but you know, a 60 game schedule last year, 2019. Yep. That's all he has on the back of the baseball card. Dom Smith, a great 2020 season. 2019, he was banged up for most of the year, and Pete Alonso came on, so he didn't really play much. You know, outside of that, what has he really done? You know, you have a lot of guys, you know, same thing for JD Davis, like a lot of guys in this lineup that we all think as Met fans have potential, and we've all fallen in love with them because they're all homegrown guys or whatever. But at the end, you know, it's not like there's Alex Rodriguez's and Derek Jeter's here, guys that have put together resumes, years of production. And even our guys that have, right? Like Lindor's having a bad season. I know he had a down season numbers-wise last year. But even for him, this season has been a complete waste.
So I tuned into the game yesterday for a little bit, and the first person I saw set to the plate was Michael Conforto, and his batting average was like .222. I was like, what the fuck?
Which is a season high, by the way. Which is a season high, by the way. He was at like .180 for like the longest time.
And then like later in the game, it's like Francisco Lindor. He's batting like .227, .228. And I was like, what is going on? Like, this is like, I don't really follow baseball like that too much. I kind of have like an idea of what's going on. And
you know what's going on.
But like, just to see the averages like on the screen this late into August as like .222, .228. It's like that's not normal. Like that's like first month of the season, I got off to a slow start number. That's not like we're in late August and I am one of the best hitters in baseball type numbers, and it's just crazy that they've had the years at the same time. McNeil's another thing. Like McNeil, I remember he had a great year. Was it last year? Was it the year before that, or both?
It was the year in 2019. He came up in 18, had a good rookie campaign in 18.
And people are talking about him winning a batting title,
and I still believe. And by the way, I still believe that. Like, I still believe Jeff McNeil. Jeff McNeil is a great hitter. It's just this year. It's not been there. You know, he had a stretch right after the All-Star break where he came on, and you thought, okay, Jeff is starting to put on one of these, you know, surges that he did, kind of similar to what he did last year, where he kind of got off to a slow start and then kind of really put it up, you know, really came on, you know, second half of the season, you know, and, it, you know, late into the season he came on. But this year it just hasn't been there for Jeff. And he's honestly, like, he's the biggest surprise out of all. Conforto's always had these peaks and valleys. Like, Michael Conforto's frustrating.
Lindor to me is very disappointing because I thought he'd be huge for the Mets. I thought he was going to turn.
The only thing I'll say about Lindor is, guys, when you know how it is, guys first come to New York, big deal. It always takes them a year to adjust. So I was kind of figured that Lindor was going to have a down year by comparison of his career numbers because it's the first year in New York, first year in the National League. So I was kind of hedging my bet that was going to happen. So I'm not really like shocked. I mean, I was shocked at how bad he looked at times this season, but in the grand scheme of things, I'm like, okay, I'll give him a pass because it's his first year in New York. But some of these other guys, like McNeil, I mean, I know McNeil's a better hitter than that. I've seen him be a better hitter than that. Conforto's consistently inconsistent. I get it. Michael Conforto's a frustrating player because he'll go on a 6-week stretch. Well, he'll carry the team. He'll hit 25 home runs and drive in 50 runs in a 6-7-8-week stretch. And you think, oh my God, this guy is, you know, with that swing, he's the next great left-handed hitter. And then it's like, then he'll have a 2-month stretch where he'll do nothing, literally do nothing. And that's just Michael Conforto's career in a nutshell. Like it's the peaks and valleys, the peaks and valleys of Conforto that just drive you insane. Dom, you know, even Dom, Dom has had an uneven year because he's had stretches where he's been really good. His numbers are good overall.
But you know, Dom hasn't gotten consistent playing time to even show.
That's the thing. And the thing with Dom that I've given him a pass is because Dom has had to learn a completely new position this year. Like, yeah. He's basically had to become an outfielder overnight, essentially. Not overnight, but you know what I mean. Like, he's essentially learning on a new position. He's not playing his natural position, and you know it is. Baseball's a mental game more than anything else. It affects you at the plate. You know, when you're trying to learn a position, and, oh, by the way, I got to go out here and hit, you know, Max Scherzer at 97. Like, yeah, it affects you.
Yeah.
So – But even then, Dom has been clutch for us. He's been somewhat productive. He's been the only other hitter on that lineup besides Pete Alonso and Nimmo that have done anything.
Baseball card, the back of his baseball card.
Yeah, Pete has shown up, and that's why I hate back.
From what I remember, right? He wasn't.
Yeah, Pete got off to a slow start, and then he kind of turned it on. Really, after he got off the DL, he went on the DL for like 10 days, and then that's when he really kind of picked it up and turned it on. And he's been pretty consistent. Overall, he's had some stretches where he's had some slumps or whatever, but you know, Pete has been for the most part pretty consistent offensively all year, and Nimmo's been an on-base machine all year. So those have honestly been the two best, honestly the best Met this season besides Jacob DeGrom before the injury has been Aaron Loop. Aaron Loop is one of the best relievers in baseball. He's got like a one ERA this entire year, and he's a lefty specialist. I mean, listen, it's frustrating. It's frustrating because, you know, this season started out with so much hope, so much good vibes. And in the span of, 3 weeks, it's basically all gone to shit. It's all gone in the fucking went toilet.
From four up to seven back in a span of 20 days.
Think about that. Think about that.
That's in base, like in any sport, actually. That's
in any sport, but in baseball, that's just that you're playing every day. I mean, it's just it's
that's like 2007, 2008 Mets.
Absolutely. Yeah. Listen,
which is probably the reason why Mets think it's so possible for them to come back because they've seen it happen.
Listen, all the things that I said 2 weeks ago are true now. I feel like the front office got overconfident. I feel like this team got overconfident. They felt like the division was theirs to win. They felt like they had it in the bag. They had no idea that the Phillies and the Braves were going to make moves at the deadline, even though they should have suspected it because these are teams that have high payrolls and are teams that are expected to win. But you know, I said it then. I thought the Mets tried to get too cute at the deadline, not addressing the rotation. And I know, to be fair, they didn't know that DeGrom was going to have that setback right after the All-Star break. I understand that. After the trade deadline, I get that. But they needed everybody that's a Met fan could have told you they needed another arm in that rotation. Trevor Williams was not enough. They needed a couple other bullpen guys. At worst, they need another bullpen guy in that bullpen. And they just didn't address their needs. I mean, Javi Baez was good, but then of course he gets hurt. So you basically haven't seen Javi. I mean, Javi Baez has played what, 7 games for the Mets? That's it.
Yeah.
And 7-8 games if that. And that's it. And ever since then, it's just been a disaster. He's been out and he came back today. He looked good. He's a presence in the lineup, so that helps. But you know, I thought the Mets kind of get too cute at the deadline. They didn't address the needs, and the Braves, to their credit and to Alex Anthopoulos' credit, they made moves. The Braves remade their entire outfield in a span of 24 hours, and I give credit to the Braves, and it worked. Yeah. And their run differential is the best in baseball. They've been on fire. Outside of the Yankees, they've been the hottest team in baseball. Like it's crazy the turnaround that the Braves have made. And I go back to the series before the trade deadline. The Mets had a 5-game series at home against the Braves. I said it then to a couple Mets buddies. I was like, at minimum, 5 games at minimum to truly feel comfortable, 4-1 against the Braves. The Braves were a dead team walking, no hope in sight. Acuña's down for the year. They have no offense. They're not getting Soroka back, probably. Osuna's slapping bitches left and right. Like the team is just dead man walking. Dead man walking. Like, and the Mets basically go 2-3 in that series. And that gave the Braves life. That gave the Braves life. And this goes to show any fan in any sport, in any team, when you're in these situations, man, you gotta keep your foot on the gas, man. You gotta put your foot on some of these teams' necks and not let them come up from air. And it just always felt like, even the fan base, we're in first place. The Mets played shitty, but they somehow won. Oh, but we're in first place. Oh, we lose 2 in a row. Oh, but we're in first place. Oh, we've been in first place 90-something days. And even I fell into that trap. But, here we are now, 3 weeks later, and guess what? We're not in first place, and now we're in 7 games back, and our season is basically over, and now you've got the owner calling out the team. And this idea that Steve Cohen is wrong for what he said, no, he's right. He's finally somebody in a goddamn organization said what it needed to be said.
And also, like, I agree with you on this. And also, you know how many times I heard sports talk radio Met fans like, oh, you know, I wish we had a Steinbrenner. Well, you know what? Who would have said shit like that? Steinbrenner would have said it exactly.
Now he's that guy. But honestly, Met fans are not upset. It's the media, yeah. Obviously. Oh, owners shouldn't act like this.
But
They loved it when it was Steinbrenner. Oh, yeah. It became part of the charm because it was the Yankees and it was George Steinbrenner. Right. No, listen, Steve Cohen, I have no problem with what Steve Cohen said. It needed to be said. Finally, somebody on this goddamn franchise and this damn organization said what needed to be said. Like, I'm sorry. I'm tired of the positive. Listen, when you've had the streak that the Mets have had over the last 20 days, where you've basically gone from being 4-7, I don't want to hear about positivity and, you know, the process and let's go back out there and let's get them tomorrow, slugger. Like, no, like it's late. You know, this isn't May. I can understand this is May and you've got, you know, 90% of your schedule still going. Like, no, yeah. This is August. This is the dog days of August and the Braves are hot and you're struggling and you're going through a streak that is like amongst the worst you've seen in franchise history. I'm sorry. No Met fan paying their hard-earned money wants to hear Pete Alonso say, you know what, well, we got to get out there tomorrow and right. You know, get back at them and let's give it the old college try again tomorrow. Like, nobody wants to hear that shit. Nobody. Right. Nobody.
It's cool for
and listen, I don't, and I don't want, and I don't want fake anger either. I don't want like just flip a table over just to flip a table. No, but genuine like frustration and like, yo, this is bullshit. Like, we're better than this. And you saw it a little bit on Friday night after that game when Michael Conforto said some things, and you know, but listen, I have no problem with Steve Cohen said it needed to be said.
Yeah,
it needed to be said.
I was really shocked. I mean, it was on Twitter too, which is
right. And listen, could he have said it better? Could he tactfully said it a little bit better? But you know, listen, it needed to be said. And
I wonder what he's going to do in the offseason, how he's going to address this all. You know, this is going to be after a disappointing first year. Like, how are you going to address it? Are our heads going to roll? Like, is everyone going to get the?
I think they should.
Like,
I think they should. I mean, listen. I mean, I think if you're looking at this team right now, I think listen. I understand Met fans want to be positive. I know the schedule coming up is lightened considerably from this 13-game, you know, barrage against the two best teams in NL. I get that. So it's gonna lighten up significantly from here. But that being said, I'm trying to find the best word. You're basically in scouting mode from here on out now. Now from August 23rd onward, you're basically seeing, okay, who on this roster is a part of the solution next year and going forward, and who is somebody that we're going to get rid of, or we're not going to resign, or not going to keep, or trade, or whatever. Right. That's what you're doing right now. And if you're Steve Cohen, you're evaluating the entire franchise from the top on down. I'm sorry, Sandy. I respect him. He's done. He's a Hall of Fame GM, baseball executive. He's been in the game forever. Listen, shift him to running the team, which was originally what he was supposed to be. He was supposed to be team president, not involved in the day-to-day baseball stuff. He was just supposed to be the president of the team, running the business side of things, put Sandy in the president's office, let him be the second in command to Steve Cohen, and then bring in a baseball executive, an executive to run the team and a GM and start there. Luis Rojas, I'm sorry. It's not all his fault. I get it, but has he really distinguished himself in 2 years as a manager of the Mets? No, he hasn't. I'm sorry. And I get he's in the loo. I understand that, but I'm sorry. I've seen enough. He needs to go. And it's not all his fault. But a lot of times when coaches get fired, it's not all his fault. And it's not always the coach's fault. Sometimes it's a lot of times it's the players, but you can't fire 25 guys.
Yeah.
You can't fire 53 guys in football, right. You know? Yeah. Right. But he hasn't distinguished himself. And again, the press conferences at the end of the game, sometimes it's just like, what are you watching? Are you watching the same thing? He's not as bad as Mickey Callaway, but you know,
Mickey Callaway was delusional, man.
Mickey Callaway was delusional. And then he was a pervert on top of that. You can't be delusional and be a pervert. Like, come on.
Mickey Callaway, what a guy.
Those were fun times, weren't they? Those were fun times. Nah, man, listen. It's not all Rojas' fault, but he's gotta go. Bring in a manager. I want an experienced manager, a guy that can come in and fire these guys up. And, you know, I don't know who that person is going to be. I wouldn't mind Buck Showalter. Like, I think Buck can still manage. I still think Buck has fire for the game. And
been in New York, basically created the dynasty before.
Exactly.
They got no credit for him.
Him and Stick Michaels. I wouldn't mind Buck Showalter. I wouldn't mind somebody else out there. But yeah, definitely a managerial change. And then of course, bringing in a GM and a baseball ops guy that basically runs the baseball side of things. And then as far as on the roster goes, I mean, you have to evaluate all these players, man, outside of Lindor, Alonso, DeGrom, and maybe Nemo. Everybody is under review. Everybody. I'm not saying everybody's going to go, but I'm saying everybody's under review. You need a third baseman. JD Davis is not a third baseman. That experiment is over. I want him off the team. It's done. Like, I get it. He's a nice kid. Maybe he goes to the American League, can be a DH, and, you know, fully realize his potential, but it's not going to be here. And which is the ironic part, is going to be a DH next year in the NL anyway. But yeah, I just, to me, if you can get something for JD Davis, I'd trade him now. You know, Conforto, I'm split on Conforto. I like Conforto a lot. I've been a Conforto defender for years upon years upon years, and he's a free agent. Listen, all I'm going to say with Michael Conforto is he better take the qualifying offer. He better take that 18, 19 mil or whatever, because
don't denigrate yourself if he's
looking for 5 years, because there were rumors that, you know, he's a Boris client too, by the way.
Oh, great.
So there, yeah. But, you know, there were rumors at the start of the season that, you know, could Conforto get six for, you know, 180 million? Yeah, no, that's not happening. At least not with this team anyway. And then everybody else, like I said, everybody's under evaluation right now. Everybody. So there's going to be some changes next year.
Good.
There's going to be some changes next year, and there should be.
It's good that some, you know, SummerSlam and AEW and CM Punk distracted you this weekend. It was a rough
weekend. Yes, it was a rough weekend, and I sat through that snore fest that was SummerSlam last night. But you know, at least we got CM Punk back in wrestling. Shout out to CM Punk. Finally, after 7 long years, and WWE and Vince McMahon continues to be its own worst enemy. You know, so what can you do? You know, Vince McMahon. So, and listen, when you have an entire product and it's being written by a crazy old man who's in his 70s, when every writer goes on every, you know, dirt sheet or podcast.
He still writes for WWE.
Yes, he's the head guy. I mean, they have a creative team.
But he makes the decisions as to what.
Listen, Josh, you have so much to learn, so much to know about this thing.
Oh my God!
Yeah, listen. Yeah, it's an audience of one, and it's not even like they're doing stuff for what. It's not even like they're doing what's best for business. It's basically an audience of one. It's what's best for Vince McMahon.
It's his fantasy.
It's what he likes. It's his fantasy. You know, there's a lot of rumors that they're selling it to NBC for $1 billion plus a gazillion. God only knows how much. I mean, the network's already gone. The network got sold to NBC for $1 billion. So, you know. And then just all the roster cuts. I mean, getting rid of Braun Strowman, getting rid of all the cuts that they did, you know, it's just, there's a lot of rumors out there that they might be selling. I'm not sure I buy it. I still can't come to the realization that Vince, the McMahon family's not going to own the WWE. And that's a bad thing too, by the way. Like that's a bad thing if they sell, because I don't want corporate wrestling. Like, I don't want NBC. You know, can you imagine some fucking executive in fucking Burbank, you know, running WWE? Like, I'm running wrestling.
That's true.
I know wrestling fans are down on Vince, and I know WWE fans like myself are down on Vince. But listen, I'll take Vince even in this crazy state of mind that he is in the 70s over some fucking corporate suit.
See, but my thing is, I don't watch wrestling, but like, I feel like, because out here, wrestling is huge. I know a lot of people who host wrestling. I personally don't. I edit a women's wrestling podcast. Like, I know the world, although I don't watch it. But like, I just feel like everyone just does nothing but complain about WWE. I've been out here since 2016.
Yes.
And the whole thing is like, WWE sucks. I fucking hate the way they book. You know, this person didn't get over. Like, they always have problems with like storylines, and then they still watch it.
They still, and that's part of the problem. Yeah. I used to be that person. I would get on the OG versions of Any Given Sunday. I'd get on and bag on WWE for hour on end with a guest.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I watched WCW growing up. I was a WCW kid, so that was like 11 or 12. That's when I stopped watching wrestling. But like, even like SummerSlam, I saw Goldberg was like, what is Goldberg doing into the goddamn ring? You want me to believe that Goldberg is in shape enough to like whoop ass like in a wrestling ring right now? Like, come on. Like, why are you guys still doing this? Like, Goldberg's literally like 97 years old. Why is this guy having matches at SummerSlam?
It's terrible. It's terrible, man. Listen.
And that's why casuals like me don't get roped in, because
exactly. Like,
watch wrestling. I haven't watched wrestling in a long time. I don't look down on wrestling. I think wrestling is like, it's whatever. It's just, it's cool. Like, I used to
watch. It's a form of entertainment that anybody else
I don't get roped in, because it's like, I'll see a promo and it's like Goldberg versus like who was it, Lashley, right? Who he faced?
Yeah, Bobby Lashley.
Like,
yeah.
You expect me to believe that Bill Goldberg is going to last 5 seconds in a ring with Bobby Lashley? I don't know who won the match, but if it wasn't Lashley, to me, it's criminal.
It was Bobby Lashley by ref stoppage because they wrote into a storyline. I don't even want to get too bothered. It's fucking annoying. Listen, I mean, that's the, I mean, but we talked about it. We talked about it, you know, as we started the show about not focusing on things that make us unhappy and all that other stuff. And this is one of them. Like, I am a diehard wrestling fan. Yeah. I used to live and breathe it every day, I go to indie shows, like everything. And now it's like, I stopped stressing about WWE. I don't watch it anymore. I don't watch it. Like, I know what's going on. I know enough. I know what's, obviously I'm always around the product. I mean, I host a wrestling podcast. I host a wrestling podcast. And I watch SmackDown on DVR, or I catch the highlights on YouTube. I don't watch Raw at all. Like, I don't even – Raw is so bad.
So there's a distinct difference between SmackDown and Raw.
Yes. Like, okay. When – like, Raw is at the point – it's just as bad, if not worse. And maybe OG wrestling fans will understand. Like, when – like, the dying days of WCW, like, those final Nitro shows.
That's when I stopped
shows,
watching wrestling. Yeah, that's exactly what
those final
thing.
Nitro shows, like
– outside in the just beach.
Raw is that bad, if not worse.
God.
I don't watch it. Like, I know what's going on. I know the results. I follow the dirt sheets. I know the results, obviously, because I do host a podcast. I got to know what's going on. But honestly, like, I don't live and die with it every day. Like, and I used to live and die with WWE, and I don't now. And it's just like, because that's like, it became so enjoyable. You know, it became so toxic. Like, I would watch a pay-per-view and just literally shit on an entire pay-per-view, and that it would literally just make me upset and angry. And I just couldn't do it anymore.
So this is my question too. Now, are you getting angry because you're not getting the results that you want, or just because it doesn't make sense and it's not entertaining? Because I feel like a lot of times, like,
both.
When I talk to people, I used to talk to people who like were watching Raw and SmackDown. I used to engineer an after show, AfterBuzz TV. I used to be an engineer, so we had a Raw after show, SmackDown after show, and a lot of like I met Ryan Satin. Like he was a producer on a podcast that I used to engineer, who works for Fox now. Like, I used to engineer Xbox 12360. He had a podcast at AfterBuzz. I was a backup engineer for that. So like I've been around it, which is interesting. And I found it a lot of times. It's like people, and this is my perception, like, and maybe because I was younger, I was like 11 or 12. Like, I just wanted to be entertained. Like, I didn't care like who won. And I feel like a lot of times people are like, you know, why would you build them up to get into this point? And then like the storyline didn't make any sense. And it's almost like people become like writers and directors. And it's like, dude, just enjoy what's going on.
But it's like any show, right? Like, if you watch Breaking Bad and they do something questionable with a character, like, you're going to be like, well, what the fuck? Like, why did, you know, Walter White do that? Or why did Jesse make that decision? Like, I don't get that or that. It's like watching any movie and watching it from
like people are overanalyzing. It's like, dude, just enjoy the match. Like, your guy didn't win. You thought he was going to win, but he didn't win. Like, that's a little wrench. Go with it.
I get what you're saying, but it's not how wrestling fans are wired. And it's like, when you see the shit that happened like last night, like, you have a Bianca Belair, a fucking young performer who you've built up and you've gotten to the point where you had her main event, one of your WrestleMania nights, the first all black main event in WWE history. And you built that up. You bouquets won awards for that shit. And then you take this who's a baby face, by the way. You take her, you put her in this situation. First of all, you advertise a match with Sasha Banks and Bianca Belair that you knew wasn't going to happen. You've known for at least a week that that match wasn't going to happen. And you still kept advertising for it. You aired the promo video at the start of the match, knowing that Sasha Banks wasn't going to be able to do the match, right? Okay, whatever. So Bianca comes out, whatever. Then they throw Carmella out there to distract everybody. Then, of course, Becky Lynch comes back. Huge pop from the audience. Huge whatever. And they have her beat her in, 17 seconds? All that work that you went to putting this young, over babyface, over. And it just goes out the drain because you make her look like an idiot from a standpoint perspective. Because it's not even like Becky beats her with her finisher in the disarmer. Like, no, she beats her with basically a modified version of the rock bottom that makes her look like a complete fucking bozo. Like, That's the shit that wrestling fans get annoyed. It's like when it's like questionable stuff like that. And again, I tell anybody, if you're a fan of Snowfall, if there's questionable writing on that show, fans are going to get on Twitter and online and they're going to bitch and complain about that. Maybe not to the same ferocity, but you're going to complain. Just think of your favorite wrestler, your favorite TV show, where it's like, I know plenty of Walking Dead fans that like are fucking upset because they just think the show has gone down in quality over the years. Like, it's the same thing with WWE. It's like, we're more vocal than your average, you know, Game of Thrones fan or whatever. And it's just questionable decisions like that. It's just questionable decisions.
I just watched the match like while you were talking. Like, that's fucking crazy.
it's like awful booking like that. Like, who, like you, and it's like you honestly want to know, like, who the fuck signed off on this? Like, who signed off on this? Like, who laid that match out? Like, who were the agents? Who were the that produced that match? That, like, who thought that this was a good idea? And you shitted on Bianca. Like, you have to turn her heel now. Like, now you have to now take one of your over baby faces and turn her heel to even save this storyline from being a disaster.
Wow. That was bad.
not to get into too much in the weeds of wrestling, but it's just annoying.
My point is that, like, that happens, right? So it's for me as a viewer, my critique to what you were saying is like, all right, so that happened. Well, why don't you just go with it? Like, why now you're upset that she lost? Be upset that she lost. Root for her to come back and whip Becky's ass.
Not to mention, A, because we don't have any hope on the creative team, quote unquote, okay. Vince McMahon. We don't have any hope on Vince McMahon. Not to mention, they do this to a lot of black wrestlers.
They do this
to a lot of black wrestlers. Like, it's a pattern. Like, they fucking had Kofi had the title for a couple months, and then Brock basically bitches him out in, you know, 2 minutes, and then he never gets a rematch. Right. That's the other thing. He never ever gets a rematch. Like,
it's my boy Booker T dirty too, man, with Triple H. I remember that. Like,
yes. I mean, Triple H taking 35 minutes after a pedigree to cover Booker T at WrestleMania 19. Like, we don't forget this shit. Like, we got a mental Rolodex of all this shit that happens, man.
That was my favorite wrestler.
It's annoying, man. It's annoying. But listen, I didn't want to get too caught up in the weeds of wrestling. CM Punk is back. That's a good thing. It's a good day for wrestling. And AEW is putting the full court press on WWE. And it's happening. And then Daniel Bryan is going to come in a couple weeks, and then the shit is really on.
Daniel Bryan's going to AEW?
Yeah.
What? Yeah. Oh my God.
I mean, it's not official, but if you basically follow the dirt sheets, and the dirt sheets are basically, for those who don't know, the media people that are in the know, that follow, that cover the wrestling business. Back in the day, you used to call them dirt sheets. But
one more question: was CM Punk's return a surprise? Did everybody know he was coming out in that moment?
Everybody knew. Obviously, again, if you follow the dirt sheets, they knew that AEW. It's one of those things where it's like, it's rumors, but it's nothing that's official. But everything is pointing; signs are pointing in that direction. So everybody pretty much knew that this was happening. But until it actually happens in wrestling, you're like, you know, there's always that because promoters like to
CM Punk, but they really did not, they weren't 100% sure that he was coming out.
I mean, you knew, but you didn't know, if that makes sense. You knew, but nothing, it's not like you had a thing saying, yep, CM Punk signed on this day. Like, there was rumors. A lot of times in wrestling, there's like, oh, backstage reports, you know, somebody saw a guy backstage. So there's rumors that didn't, I mean, and there's a thing in wrestling, until it's official, it's not official. Until you see a guy come on TV, it's not official. It's official. It's an amazing world. It's an amazing world that I choose to be a fan of.
I'm casually on the outside, just like.
Like, Josh is like, what a bunch of fucking dweebs.
I'm a person, like, I don't think anybody should hate or disrespect anybody for something that they like. Like, it always bothers me when people have hobbies that's like,
yeah, you know, it's people that watch reality.
People talk about people who watch wrestling, say, oh, F you, man. Like, you probably like some other shit too. Like, we all like different stuff. Right. Like, it is what it is. Right. So
I've had people shit on me that I like wrestling, but you watch Love and Hip Hop. Like,
right.
Really?
You watch Love and Hip Hop. Then you turn on The Bachelor every Monday.
Right. Like, it's like literally the same shit. Like, literally the same shit. But listen, I can't bag on people that like the Fast and Furious franchise. Like, I'm sorry.
I've never seen a Fast and Furious movie.
Listen, God bless them. You like what you like.
I've never seen
it. I just don't know who's keeping the Fast and Furious franchise going. Maybe it's Asians.
I don't understand why everybody's
so mad. Maybe it's Asians. I think it's Asians.
Why are you still furious after fucking 15 years? Calm down, yo. Stop being mad at things. I don't understand why that movie still exists. It doesn't make any sense to me.
And it's become so cartoonish, that franchise, that it's like
It's always been cartoonish to me.
I mean, it's always been cartoonish. Like, what is this? It's always been cartoonish, but it's gotten to the point of just like
it's ridiculous now.
It's ridiculousness now. John McClane in Die Hard is shaking his head at some of the shit that Vin Diesel does. That's in these bad. Movies. Like, come on.
Well, I remember when Paul Walker died. Like that movie had a lot of hype around it, and people like beefed that up.
And they've had two other movies after that, and they're planning another one, I think. So
and The Rock is in it, right? Isn't The Rock?
No, he's done. He's done after House and Shaw, I think.
Did you know that The Rock and Vin Diesel have it in their contracts that they can't lose a fight on screen?
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
That's in their contracts.
I'm not surprised. And Rock and Vin Diesel can't get along. They have a blood feud.
I hear.
Yeah, Vin Diesel. Yeah, listen, we've gone off the rails, man. Let's get this thing back. Listen, the Mets season's over. It's trash. It's over. It's done. There's no need to. It's probably the last time we'll talk about the Mets on this show, barring something miraculous, which I don't see happening. Listen, and I'm a fan. If it does, great, wonderful, awesome. But I just don't see it happening. So yeah,
no, it's not happening.
RIP to the 2021 Mets season and what could have been. That's what the mantra of this season will be. What could have been. And and I'll end with this. That's the most frustrating part about it is. I know. Never will this division be as winnable as it was this year. You had the Phillies who couldn't get out of their own way. The Braves were ravaged by injuries and off the field stuff. You know, the Marlins are the Marlins. Like the Mets, you know, it was golden. It was a golden opportunity for the Mets to win this division this year. And they let it slip through their fingers. And a lot of it is injuries. I get it. The Mets have been ravaged by injuries. But, you know, it's like you had it. You had it in the bag, man.
There's always next year.
Yeah. There's always next year. I guess. Maybe. Maybe. Yeah, let's move on. Speaking of, as always, next year, that seemed to be the mantra for the military industrial complex.
Oh, my God.
There's always next year, right? That's a professional ass segue shit. That's a good segue right there. No,
fantastic segue.
It's always next year. That's what the ghouls of the Pentagon and the military industrial complex would tell us, right? It's always next year for us to, you know, get our opioids. I mean, fight for the freedom of and the liberation of Afghanistan and women and Islam and all that good stuff, you know, and democracy throughout the world, obviously we went in a lot of different directions on this show, but it's pretty much going to be a one topic show for the day. Right. I don't know how you can not do a show and not be the overarching theme and topic of the show for this week. I mean, it's unless you've been living under a rock, Afghanistan has probably been the biggest news story in the world over the last, 7 days or so. It's finally about to come to an end. This 20-year odyssey, disaster, nightmare, whatever adjective you want to use to describe it, it's finally coming to an end. I'll let you go first because I have a lot of different emotions and anger and a bunch of things that I want to get off my chest, but I'll let you go first, man. 20 years of Afghanistan.
I mean, I'm really interested in what you have to say because, I mean, you're a vet and, you know, I feel like you have a unique perspective on this. I mean, my perspective just basically comes from, you know, what I've seen on the news. I wouldn't even say the news because I don't trust CNN and the MSNBCs of the world. And
you mean Chris Cuomo's Italian?
Yeah, I don't trust them too, especially when it comes to foreign policy, I don't take.
And they're showing their true colors this week, by the way.
1,000%. If there's one thing this week has taught anybody who hasn't been paying attention, I think that you knew this, I knew this, Manny, but the media loves war. I mean, just
it sells
absolutely. Like, I mean, pro, whatever they can say whatever they want about, you know, peace and, you know, whatever, but they every time, you know, there has been any type of threat or talk about us leaving whatever country or, you know, bringing troops back home, there's always been some type of pushback by every outlet too, on both sides of the aisle. There's always some type of pushback. And you know, and we're seeing that, like, we are leaving Afghanistan. We have been leaving Afghanistan, and I was under the impression that it was a great thing. It's kind of disheartening to see not just the media push back on it, but like so many people kind of fall for it. Like now all of a sudden people are talking about Afghan women rights, which don't get me wrong. I consider myself a feminist. Yeah. I will tell people I am a feminist, like, and I believe in equal rights for all women across the world. But like, let's not pretend that like we were out there in Afghanistan fighting for human rights. That's not the reason why we were in Afghanistan at all. You know, the Taliban is a terrorist organization, but you know who's been allies with the Taliban? We have been.
we created the Taliban.
We use the Taliban to fight ISIS, ladies and gentlemen. So we have been in bed with these guys. It's just a situation where it's just like we all, both sides of the aisle, Democrat, Republican, conservative, liberal, you will find very few people who do not agree that, hey, let's bring back our troops. Let's bring them back safely. Let's, you know, it's a problem. You know, we have a problem even taking care of our troops when they come back with PTSD or, you know, or all these type of conditions. And, you know, I think we all can agree that endless wars and wars for no reason are bad. The only people who still want to be out there are people who believe at this point, I don't know how you still believe it, but believe that we're fighting some type of war on terror, which we aren't doing. So Biden coming out and saying, hey, we're coming out of Afghanistan, to me is a good thing. It's a great thing. It's something that I have been preaching, that you have been preaching, that any populist or any non-interventionist, any libertarian have been preaching for the longest time now. Bring the troops home. We're doing it for in one of the countries, at least we're doing it. So that's something that should be celebrated. Now, that does that mean that it's going to go smoothly? No. Does that mean that there's going to be some hiccups? Yes. Does that mean that, you know, certain things are going to look bad? Yes. But like, we knew this. Like, I don't understand why people are surprised that, you know, this hasn't been the smoothest transition out. This is not like that area is so destabilized because of our presence and because of, you know, just the way that politics are in that area, that of course us leaving is going to cause a big stir. That's what it's going to be. And it's fooling a lot of people into thinking that like we have to be the policemen of the world and that we have to stay there for human rights reasons when we weren't even there for human rights reasons to begin with. So, you know, just my message to anybody listening or watching would be that, hey, us leaving is a good thing. That doesn't mean that we still can't fight for equal rights across the world. It doesn't mean that we have to stop pushing for equal rights for women across the world. It doesn't mean that we can't voice our opinions and our support for Afghani women across the world. But let's not pretend that us gunning out of Afghanistan is the reason why these women are in the situation that they're in when we should have been in the first place. So Manny, I know that you served, and I'm really anxious to hear what you have to say and what your perspective is.
Yeah, this week has been an interesting one, man. Listen, I was blessed to have never gone to Afghanistan. I went to Iraq, but my brother deployed to Afghanistan. He's one of the first initial soldiers there during the surge in 2001. You know, obviously I've known a lot of friends and brothers, really, that have fought in that ugly, useless war. Listen, I have a lot of thoughts. There's a cynical side to me. There's an angry side to me about this. There's a lot of emotions. I mean, obviously the cynical side of me will say, yeah, they're ending this war to start another one. I mean, you can never put it past the military industrial complex. I mean, they did raise the military budget. Obviously, they're not just doing that for shits and giggles. Obviously, they're going to look to bomb some other country, maybe Somalia. Who's next in the wheel of fortune of U.S. interventionism and bombings? But that being said, listen, this was something that should have ended a long time ago, at least 16 years ago. This war should have came to an end. You know, and we've been sold a bill of goods and a bed of lies for 20 years. 20 years. 20 years people have been dying in this war on both sides. Troops on both sides. Civilians on both sides. And for what? That's the part that, you know, I found myself a lot this week saying, looking for cause, like, for what? What is the ultimate cause of it? What is the ultimate end game of this? What was the ultimate end result of this? What was the ultimate synopsis we will have from this? And it's just, it's the same thing. It's like another Vietnam, another useless war, bloody war that costs the lives and the well-beings of thousands of American men and women for nothing. For nothing. And all the while, the U.S. gets to pat itself on the back and say they're the purveyors of democracy and justice and freedom for all, even though they're imperialist and terrorist in their own right. You know, we get to basically pat ourselves on the back and say we're the ultimate fighters of freedom. No, we're not. We're just as bad as Great Britain and the UK. We're just as bad as the Spanish Empire, the Ottoman Empire, any other empire out there throughout history that is colonized and used imperialistic tactics to, you know, advance their own agendas and their own, you know, political ideology or whatever. We're no different. We're the same. The thing that angers me the most, man, is just that, again, we've been in this godforsaken country for 20 years, all the lives that were lost, all the blood that was shed, and honestly, nothing was gained. Nothing was gained. What? What did we do? What did we accomplish? What did we gain? What was the end result? Nothing. For the country, for Afghanistan to be in a worse shape today than it was in 2001, in worse shape today than it was in 2001. Like, why? Why? To prop up some government, a crooked government that never had a chance of lasting? This was going to happen. Listen, this idea that, oh, it could have been handled differently. Everybody all of a sudden became a war logistics expert, right? Like, oh, this could have
been geopolitics all of a sudden.
Yeah. Right. All of a sudden, like, oh, this was going to be, first of all, war is ugly. War is ugly. And there's never a good way to end a war. Find me the war that ended good. Like, everybody just shook hands. All right. Okay. Yeah. This was good, guys. All right. Yeah. No. War is ugly. War ends ugly. It's easy to start a war. It's always difficult to end a war. Always. Look back at any war throughout history. It's always difficult to end a war, especially a war like this that was built on a bed of lies and a bed of bullshit. And the amount of lives that we lost and the money that was spent, $2 trillion in 20 years. $2 trillion, again, propping up a corrupt government. You know, everybody wants to sit here and throw shades at the Taliban. And listen, the Taliban is not, they're not, listen, they're nothing to write home about. I get it. The Taliban are evil people. But what was the Afghan government? That president that was overthrown, that left with a car and bags full of money?
Bounced.
Like, what was he?
Yep.
Bounced. Bounced. He was just as corrupt. He's just as bad as the Taliban. He's just as bad as the Taliban. And that's the problem. Like, we always talk about in our election system right now, it's the worst, you know, it's the ideology that we subscribe to when we were voting for who our next elected officials are, right? It's the, you know, it's the best of the worst choices, right? And it's like, it's the same with who we get in bed with on geopolitical stages, right? Like, it's like we get in bed with these awful, vile people in the name of democracy because we want to further some sort of agenda when we're really not. We're literally just doing the same thing the other side is doing it, and we're just slapping the American flag on it and calling it democracy. It's not. Anybody can sit there and can tell you that it's been to Afghanistan. Anybody that's spent 5 minutes in Afghanistan, no, the Afghanistan army, the Afghan police, the Afghan government was crooked and was never going to survive. And this would have happened. This would have happened in 2016. This would have happened in 2005. This would have happened any year in the litany of years that this war has happened. This would have happened. And yes, the images are horrifying. Yes, I hated seeing what happened this year, with this week. Those scenes from the airport. That's heartbreaking. Seeing these people. And that's who I'm more upset. I'm upset about. I'll take that back. I'm upset at a lot of people, and I'm upset for a lot of people. Mainly, I'm upset for those civilians, those people that had their countries and their homes wrecked on a war that they didn't ask for, that they had no involvement in, that had no say in. Those people, those are the people that are suffering right now. Those are the people that are going through hell right now, that who knows, may end up dying even more or end up getting slaughtered even more by this fucking heinous fucking group. Right? I'm mad for our servicemen and women. Like, I'm mad for them, because how many fucking soldiers went over there, got blown up, came back in a fucking pine box, or came back luckily alive, but fucked up in the head or fucked up physically? Like, for what? For what? Tell me, for what? What did we accomplish in this war? What did we gain? What did we do? Is Afghanistan better today? No, we talked about it. No, they're worse off today than they were even in 2001. Like, so yeah, there's a lot of anger. There's a lot of hurt. You look at the, you read the Afghan papers. I recommend everybody go and Google and find the Afghan papers, and you find out the level of corruption and lies that existed in our own government over these last 20 years. They knew this, the U.S. government that knew that this war was unwinnable, that knew that this was a big ass waste of time, and kept propping it up, kept throwing money and lives without a care for any of them, for anybody's life, for anybody's family, just kept throwing money and lives at the problem. And they knew this war was unwinnable. And that's the biggest crime. The fact that I got to turn on CNN and hear these fucking ghouls like John Bolton and fucking Condoleezza Rice wants to put out an op-ed. George Bush wants to put on a fucking state. These fucking war criminals, these war criminals. That's who you want to throw at me, CNN? That's who you want to tell me? Who the fuck cares what John Bolton thinks? This fucking bozo who lied us into war, who all of them, Cheney, Rumsfeld, all of them should be in fucking jail. All of them. Because they're all war criminals. All of them.
The fact that CNN these are the people we should have on is disgusting.
Right. Not the guy that's writing a book on that that Breaking Points had on this week. Sagar and Crystal interviewed the guy that's writing a book on the Afghan papers. Not him. Not him. Who's on the ground covering this war year in and year out. Knows the ins and outs.
Journalist.
An independent voice on this matter. No, we don't have him on. We'll have John Bolton on. We'll trot out General Petraeus out there. All these fucking generals. The Pentagon. Where's the Pentagon? Everybody blames, you know, the Pentagon. The Pentagon. There's people in the Pentagon that should be fired today. Fired, thrown on their asses. And that's the nice, and I'm being nice. Some of them deserve to be in jail. These generals that lied, that knew that this shit was bogus and kept propping it up there too, kept Mad Dog. Remember Mad Dog was some American hero? Mad Dog Maddox, he's another one. All of them, everybody, both parties, everybody's got blood on their hands. And again, I reiterate, soldiers, men and women, people, your next door neighbors, people you knew in your communities, your cousins, your brothers, your sisters, people went and fought in a war, an unjust war, a war built on a bed of lies. And some came back in a pine box. Some came back with PTSD. Some came back fucked up physically. And for what? For what? We learned nothing from Vietnam. Vietnam was the same thing. They always say history repeats itself. No, it's true. It does. Because this is our Vietnam. This is our generation's Vietnam. And I get pissed about it, obviously, because I also served, and I knew a lot of people that fought in a heinous war. I knew a lot of people that came back with PTSD. I have a buddy of mine that committed suicide because of PTSD, because of going overseas. So yeah, this shit is real. And I hate that this war, that the lives of so many men and women are being used as a tool for advanced agendas and, you know, fucking neocon perspectives, like, fuck off. Like, it just drives me insane. And the other thing that drives me insane about it, too, is $2 trillion. How many times do we hear, oh, no, we can't have Medicare for all because the cost would be so much. Oh, we can't have student loan forgiveness or student debt, or we can't cancel student debt because, oh, my God, look at all the money that would cost. Oh, we can't fucking, you know, we can't fight hunger. We can't fight poverty. We can't fight homelessness because, oh, who's going to pay for that? Who's going to split the bill? You know, when we're bombing some other fucking country, we never ask what the price tag is of that. You know, when we're intervening in some other fucking country's political elections, we never ask what the price of that is. Never. Somehow we never ask where the money is when we're trying to bomb another country or when we're trying to throw money at the problem in Afghanistan. We never ask where the money's coming from. But somehow when it's to help us domestically, there's fucking people that live in communities across this country that have fucking potholes and shitty infrastructure and terrible, terrible systemic issues. Flint still probably doesn't have drinkable water. But no, they don't get $22 trillion. You know, they don't get $2 trillion. No. Afghanistan does. So really? And then you have the audacity to tell me that you can't do student loans forgiveness, or you can't eliminate student loans, or you can't cancel student loans, that you can't do Medicare for all.
An infrastructure bill, you know, that people don't want to go over $2 trillion. Like literally, the number is $2 trillion that they want.
The fact that Democrats and Republicans literally fought while people were dying, going hungry, over 1,400 measly fucking dollars in stimulus checks, while they're throwing $300 million, what, a day in Afghanistan down the toilet?
Got to make it 1.9. Can't go over 2, baby.
Come on, man. That is the part. Aside from the lives lost and the damage that it was, the irreversible damage that was done to not only our men and women, but the men and women over there. That's the part that angers me the most, man. Because that is heinous. Because that shows you that these politicians don't give a fuck. And these media people don't give a fuck. And you know what? I'm also going to point the finger at us, at voters, at common folk, just like you and myself, because we continue to vote and prop both these parties and politicians alike that continue to get us into these forever endless wars. You bear the responsibility for that too. Look yourself in the mirror. Don't sit there and cheerlead this video or any other video like this. Blame yourself too, because every time that you voted, listen, Obama's got blood on his hands. Bush should be in jail. Forget blood on his hands. That motherfucker's got a fucking tidal wave of blood on his hands. That fucking war criminal. Obama's got blood on his hands, like I said. Trump's got blood on his hands. And even Biden. You know, I gave Biden credit because it took a lot of guts to have that press conference this week and pull us out, because he couldn't have gone against his word. He could have, but I gave him credit. That's the best thing. Listen, I don't care what anything else that Biden does. Listen, I'm a staunch progressive through and through. You know that. But I will give him high marks on this. It took guts to do what he did this week and to stand by it.
Yeah.
When you could argue it's political suicide, and he stood by it. But even he has blood on his hands.
He's vice president for 8 years. I mean,
he's vice president for eight years. And he was in
the surge back when Obama was, he said he was against the surge, but at the same time,
against the surge.
Like,
but
here's another thing. Like, it's not like we're just in Afghanistan. It's not like we're just bombing Afghanistan.
Right. Like, we're bombing Somalia. We're bombing Syria. Look at the instability all across.
Biden points, I guess, for getting us out of Afghanistan. But like, what about everything else? And that's
You're absolutely right. And I'm giving him credit for at least sticking through Trump's initial plan to get us out.
Right. And that's the thing, Trump. And to give Trump, I mean, some type of credit, he started the withdrawal of it all. I mean, he did hand it over to the Taliban. Like literally made a deal with the Taliban. That's not like me being hyperbolic, like, oh, Trump handed it. No, like he literally like cut a deal with the Taliban.
But here's the thing. Yeah. The initial plan was to get the Taliban and the Afghan government together and for them to work out a peace agreement.
Right.
The Afghan government refused to deal with the Taliban.
Right.
There is a civil war. And Sagar, I know you can't stand Sagar, but Sagar said something this week or maybe it was a phrase that he borrowed, but whatever. But he said, people need to start understanding that the enemy gets a vote too. They get a vote too. It's a war. The enemy gets a say so. You may not like it. You don't want to like it, but they get a vote too. They get a say in this as well. And you can't get two parties to negotiate if one just absolutely refuses to meet anybody halfway. Forget halfway, refuses to even negotiate. And the Afghan government, that's a fact. They refuse to negotiate with the Taliban. So what do you want the administration to do? And again, I can't stand Trump. I'm not – listen, this isn't about Trump. This isn't about Trump right now or our hate for Trump
policy,
or whatever. It's about our foreign policy. Past
20 years.
Our 20 years, 40 years. Our
specifically Afghanistan.
Yeah. It's a broken system. It's a broken system. It's a system that keeps getting propped up by the media. Again, this is the biggest. This is the biggest thing that anybody that didn't know or didn't have their ears to the street or didn't understand why we're so passionate about this. Look at the media. The media has covered themselves in neocon bullshit this entire week. Oh, how could you? That's a sign of weakness. And the media. And listen, folks, don't be so surprised. War is big business. Think the media's not banking on Afghanistan? They're banking on this shit. That's endless reels of bombing. They don't give a fuck whose lives are getting lost in this chaotic war. They don't care. They don't give a fuck. They don't care. These media executives, you think Jeff Zucker, he's not sending his kids off to fight. Man. The head of CNN, you think he's sending his kids off to fight in Afghanistan? No. It's your kids. It's the kids in your community that are getting off to get sold, you know, to go fight. You know, we can't pay college athletes because, God forbid, you know, giving a 20-year-old that much money, but we could go send a 20-year-old to go bomb Kabul.
Right.
And we could do that. You know, we could do that. It's just – I'm angry, man. I'm angry because, again, 20 years, all the lives that were lost on both sides, and for what? For what?
For nothing. And, I had this conversation the other day where it was just kind of like – I was on Instagram and, you know, a lot of conservatives that I went to school with back in high school, like they're really against what's going on, especially military wives. They're mad at Biden for, you know, what's going on. And I come to the realization that it's not so much that they're mad at the fact that Biden has withdrawn the troops, but they have to feel like their husbands missed birthdays, missed holidays, missed all these events for something. Like,
bro,
and a lot of it is like, you get what I'm saying? It's like,
no,
it's a reaction of like, so you're telling me that we're leaving. Afghanistan has fallen to the Taliban for what? Like, why was my husband? Why was my brother?
In 17 days, no less.
Right.
Like, people like to bring up Saigon. Yeah. Like, a lot of people brought up Saigon. Saigon fell in 1975. We left in 1973. It took 2 years, 2.5 years for Saigon to fall. Kabul fell in 17 days.
And I think a lot of people, and this is not just conservatives, but a lot of like military wives, a lot of people, like they're like, there had to be a reason. They can't wrap their heads around the fact that there was no reason for this outside of like, hey, military industrial complex kind of wanted to make some money on this. Or, hey, you know, Afghanistan, you know, that land is sitting on some nice natural resources that we kind of want to be in control of, you know, and a lot of people are just having a hard time grasping that their son, husband, wife, whatever, is just there as a pawn, you know, and them being in Afghanistan, as weird as it sounds, gives them meaning. It gives them a purpose. It allows them to be called a hero. Do you get what I'm saying? It's like this whole
mindfuck
that the media controls. And
it's hero worship. It's hero worship.
And fools or manipulates, you know, these poor men and women who are back home waiting for their husbands and wives to come home. And, you know, it's just sad, man. It's just really sad.
A little insight into me. Those who may know have listened to the show, but I deal with a debilitating back condition. I have disc herniations and I have nerve damage in my neck and in my spine. And, you know, I may need some sort of spinal fusion, maybe even some thoracic outlet syndrome surgery in my future here, my near future. All this because I deployed to Iraq. So I went, fought for my country, you know, did the hoorah American patriotism thing for a year. In a war that was unjust, talk about another disaster, Iraq, in a war that was even another war that was sold on a bed of lies. And I came back with a fucked up back. I can't do half of the things that I used to be able to do. I can't even play with my kids the way I would like to, or involve with them in their sports and their athletics as I'd like to, because I came back fucked up. And I don't regret any of it because, hey, I signed a contract. It was some of the best years of my life. I made some of the best friends, brothers that I will go to my grave saying, these are some of the best friends I've ever made. So I don't regret any of that. But I think that's another thing that drives me insane, that I fucking went and I came back with a fucked up back. And I'm fortunate because I don't have PTSD. I'm lucky by comparison, right? But I came back with a fucked up back. And for what? And for what? Nothing. Nothing. I'll probably never be able – there has not been a day in what day is 2021. There's not been a day in 12 years that I've been without pain, some sort of pain. And I don't care how much money I make. I don't care the level of success that I have doing this, whether this show blows up, whether podcasting in general blows up, whatever. I win the lottery, whatever. I don't care how much level of success, money, fame, whatever I get. I will trade all of that to be healthy and happy and be pain-free. And I'm sure a lot of vets feel the same way. And then it hits home when you see shit like this week. These neocons, these fucking bozos, these ghouls. Again, John Bolton. I gotta listen to fucking John Bolton basically tell the American people they're wrong because this isn't what they should be wanting. They should want more military intervention in Afghanistan. This guy who should be literally sitting in Guantanamo Bay as we speak. It just doesn't sit right with me, man. It doesn't sit right with me. And again, the media, same thing. The bed of lies that they continue to put out there and to help these politicians and their propaganda and these parties. And again, both parties have blood on their hands. Both of them. This isn't left, right. This isn't conservative, liberal. Both parties have blood on their hands. The Pentagon has blood on their hands. The media has blood on it. Anybody who perpetuated these lies and these propaganda for 20 years, you have blood on your hands. And look at yourself. And voters who continue to vote for these politicians and vote for these fucking neocons and neolibs, you have blood on your hands too. And that may seem hyperbolic. That may seem like, oh, how can you say that? No, it's true. Because if you vote for people like Ted Cruz, you, the Dan Crenshaws of the world.
Don't get me started with him. Jesus Christ.
You have blood on your hands. Yeah. You're just as bad as John Bolton. You weren't making the decisions, but you're basically endorsing everything that they do. And it's just, it's beyond me, man. And again, it bothers me because now all of a sudden everybody cares about Afghan women. Right. Now everybody cares about the people of Afghanistan. No, you don't give a fuck about any. You don't give a fuck about Afghan women. You don't care about women's rights in Afghanistan. You don't give a shit about any of that. These back to brunch liberals now, they care about Afghan women. The fuck off. No, you don't. No, you don't. You couldn't. You wouldn't have known Kabul from Madison, Wisconsin 2 days ago. You don't care. You don't care. You care now because the media is showing you pictures and horrifying footages. Oh, no. As you're having your brunch and you're drinking your mimosas, now you feel horrified. Fuck off. No, you don't. You don't care about these people. Some of these people, these rich white liberals, I'm going to say it, rich white liberals who don't have family members that would be caught dead being in the military. Now they're horrified. Now they feel some type of way. Look at the mom that probably lost some lost a kid, maybe two, to war. Or the wife or the mom or the sister or the brother that has to see their fucking loved one come back and have fucking PTSD or have a fucking steel rod in their leg. For what? Democracy? Nah, man. It's bullshit. It's bullshit. And again, I'll reiterate this. The media, the Pentagon, the military-industrial complex, both parties, voters, all of you have blood on your hands. All of you. No. Yeah, you have blood on your hands. Yes. Everybody that continued to perpetuate this nonsensical war for as long as we did, you have blood on your hands. Taliban left in 2000. You know, Osama bin Laden left in 2002. He was gone. 2002. Read the Afghan papers. He was gone. And the American government knew he was gone in 2002. Fled to Pakistan. They didn't know where. Some believe that he was still coming back and forth. But for the most part, he was out of country in 2002. That war was won in 6 months. And we continue. And then we get into bed with the Afghan government.
Right.
And all you conservatives and all you libertarians out there that all focus on the purse and the budget and spending, you know, and all that, right? Part of that $2 trillion was to endorse and prop up the Afghan government that folded like a cheap suit in 17 days.
And the military too.
And the military. And yet with a straight face, you tell me we can't do Medicare for all. We can't cancel student debt.
Right.
Student loan debt. You know, we can't. We have a homelessness crisis in this country. We have a wage gap crisis in this country. Right? You don't think $2 trillion would have gone a long way in fixing some of that? Infrastructure. There's some places in this country that have infrastructure akin to some World War II destroyed areas of Europe. You don't think $2 trillion would have helped that? People in Flint that died, their local government poisoned them. You don't think $2 trillion would have helped fix the water systems in Flint? You don't think so? Yeah, I think so.
Absolutely. But,
hey, that wasn't what was on the agenda, right? Nah, you know, it was democracy in Afghanistan. If the American government is so concerned with atrocities and human rights atrocities, why are we still in bed with Saudi Arabia?
Thank you. Yeah.
The Saudi prince. Have we held their feet to the fire for Jerome Khashoggi's murder? By the way, but we care about atrocities.
Afghan women. What about Saudi women?
What about the atrocities that are going on all over the world, in Somalia, in Myanmar, aka Burma? All these things. I'll give you chapter and verse. Human rights violations and issues going on in different countries around the world. Look at the atrocities going on in Venezuela. We're not bombing Venezuela.
We already fucked up Venezuela.
Yeah,
though.
We'll be here another 2 hours talking about Venezuela alone. But yeah, it just, man, to wrap up, it gets me upset, man, because again, it's not even so much because I fought. Because again, I'm one of the lucky ones. I came back without PTSD. I came back without a fucking rod in my leg or a fucking prosthetic arm or something. And I didn't get to go to Afghanistan. But it's not even about the fact that I served. If you're not, as an American citizen, forget what your ties are to the military or whatever. As an American citizen, if you think back at the cost and the price, the cost, not just monetarily, but the cost on lives and stability that this war cost, how are you not outraged at this? And the sickening thing about it is this will be in the news cycle for a week or two. Maybe a month, and then we'll move on to something else.
Yep.
We'll move on to the next story. Maybe the Delta variant becomes worse, and then that'll COVID will regain the spotlight. Maybe another black person will get shot by the police, and that'll regain the spotlight. I mean, it will just go on to something else. And all the outrage, all the logistics experts, all the, you know, the supporters of Afghan women rights and all that stuff will go by the wayside. And secretly the US government and the military industrial complex will fund another war. Because we don't learn from history.
That's what I'm worried about is the fact that, yeah, we're out on Afghanistan now, but what's next? And you know, it's up to us as the people and you're right, man. Like the people who
Somalia. That's next. Venezuela, that's next. Name a country. I mean, really, it's a wheel of fortune. Just literally spin it, and wherever it lands, that's what we bomb next.
And it's this goes back to the media too, where the media is doing us a disservice. Where it's up to us to keep ourselves informed, but when the media on your television is constantly misinforming you, how do you expect a public to be informed? They're doing a not everyone's like you and I, Manny, and the people watching this, where like we go out and we seek independent media that we trust and that we vet. And, you know, not everybody's like that. And everybody has, you know, the passion for politics. Not everybody has the time for politics. There's, you know, we are invested in this and we're heavily invested in this. But for someone who like could only watch like 5 to 10 minutes on a television screen, you know, what's going on in this world, for CNN to be doing such a disservice, for MSNBC to be doing such a disservice, Fox News, we can get into for hours. But, you know, the media to me is just as culpable. And I know it sounds crazy because they're not drafting any legislation. They're not the politicians making any decisions. But if you want to talk about, you know, an accessory to murder or whatever, like the media, the Jake Tappers of the world, the Chris Cuomos of the world, all these people who you watch on a nightly basis,
who you might agree with on Black Lives Matter, who you might agree with on social issues, who go hard for, you know, certain issues that us on the left might agree with. These people, at the end of the day, are there to serve a conglomerate that is making money off of the backs of the military industrial complex. And they are, they should be held responsible for this. It is absolutely disgusting. And without an honest and true media, this country is not going to fix itself at all. Like this goes back to the problems we have socially in this country, you know, with between Black Lives Matters and just everything, every problem that we have stems from the media, which is why someone like Donald Trump was probably elected in the first place, was because of the distrust of media, and rightfully so. If there's one thing that I don't disagree with Trump supporters on, is the fact that you can't trust this media. And the biggest scar in my mind is their coverage on our foreign policy. You know, and to see the media kind of just make this out to be like it's the worst thing in the world, that Biden's, you know, making a mistake, and that we should have, like you said, the fact that John Bolton is on as like a freaking source of like objectiveness is
Condoleezza Rice published an op-ed.
It's insane. It is literally insane. It's like having Hannibal Lecter on. Like, should we be eating humans?
No,
like,
even better. The Lincoln Project filled with nothing but Republicans that served on the Bush administration, that and all were complicit in the lies and the bullshit of this war.
Right.
And the fact that liberals, all because they wanted to dunk on Donald Trump, or they wanted to win this, the resistance against Donald Trump, they got in bed with the Lincoln Project and these fucking ghouls.
Who created,
what do you have to say for yourself?
Who created this fucking monster? Yeah, no, I agree with you. I'm not the type of person. I've always agreed that the media has been toxic in this country. I don't like getting into that conversation with conservatives, though, because I don't think they are able to distinguish the differences between CNN and Fox News. And I think there is a huge difference. But for particular topic, particularly foreign policy, it's all the same. You can both sides me on this.
The difference is subtlety. Fox News doesn't hide what they're about. They're propaganda. Right. While CNN paints it as news, even though they're propagandists as well. So, and MSNBC, they might as well be Fox News Lite, you know. On the opposite side.
They try to be.
You know? It's disgusting, man.
It's just for an accessory to this, it's the media. I think the media has played such a horrible role in, you know, our presence overseas, and they're just as culpable. And I don't know how you hold the media responsible, but something has to be done.
And you know what upsets me more? A lot of things upset me, apparently, but you know what upsets me even more, right? There's a lot of voters that just don't pay attention to foreign policy. Doesn't. And I get it to a certain extent, right? Because, you know, when you've got issues going on in your community.
And it's confusing.
Right? Because you don't know what to disseminate. You don't know what the fuck, you know, you can't tell the difference between Taliban and Al-Qaeda and ISIS and who the fuck, you know what I mean? It's confusing, right? Plus you got a lot of, you know, plus people live in fucked up, you know, listen, the country's fucked up in a lot of ways, right? And if you live in Flint, you think you got time to figure out what the hell is going on in Kabul? No, you got your own issues at home. You got your own Kabul at home, right? So I get it. But If you're one of those folks that's fortunate to live in a decent area where, I mean, listen, every area has issues, right? Every state has issues and their own problems. And I'm not trying to minimize one area versus the other. But if you're one of those people that live in an area where you're lucky enough to not have as many of the, you know, issues as, say, you know, this city compared to that city, foreign policy is important. And I think voters should understand that. And this is why this is important, because these things affect you. They don't affect you directly, but they do affect you, and they do affect a lot of what they affect media, they affect politicians and who funds them. Like, foreign policy is important. It is very important.
Yeah.
And we need to pay attention to this shit, and we need to understand, like, and we need to start putting in politicians in DC that are anti-war and anti-forever wars on top of that. And this interventionist ass fucking agenda that a lot of politicians and a lot of government officials are with, you know, that we need to end this shit, man, because again, the cost is too great.
I agree
on both sides.
I think it's hard to overcome the hero worship that, you know, our country has towards our troops. You send troops out to war, and it's like, oh, they're fighting for our freedom. They're fighting for our country. And you have
That's another thing. I don't mean to cut you off, but this shit is triggering, man. You know, every single one of you, you remember I said how people, voters, people like you and I, have blood on your hands. You think you don't have blood on your hands because you think you do the right thing in an airport. You salute for a troop, a platoon of soldiers as they come through a gateway or a gate or a terminal. You know, you think you applaud people because you may have bought them a drink at a bar one day, or because, you know, you're a business and you have a military discount. You think you're without blame. No, this country, we celebrate our soldiers and we prop them up as literally tools and props. We don't give a fuck about soldiers, because if we gave a fuck about soldiers, we care about what the situation in the VA is. There wouldn't be one fucking homeless vet in this country right now if we actually cared about our soldiers. They wouldn't. But no, we don't care enough. But, you know, we tell ourselves we care. We tell ourselves that we're okay and we're good people because, you know, we give them a 15% discount at Applebee's, or because, you know, a vet can go buy sneakers at Foot Locker with his 20% discount, or, you know, because we, you know, we say thank you for your service. Nah, that's not caring about vets. If you cared about vets, you wouldn't vote for politicians who want to put our vets and the lives of these vets in danger, and their families by definition too. Because these families are with the ones that are affected as well. You know, imagine a mom that sent her kid off to fucking Afghanistan and her kid comes back and fucking a steel rod in his fucking leg. You don't think she's affected? You don't think she has skin in the game, or a wife or a partner, husband, whatever. You don't think they're affected? Yeah, of course they are. So don't tell me that you care about vets. Oh, I support the vets. We support our vets. No, you don't.
Well, it's not just that for me. It's the hero worship that justifies us having troops in these occupations to begin with, right? So if you look at these troops as heroes, if you look at them as, like, you know, these arbiters of, like, freedom, you know, that they're protecting our rights, they're protecting our way of life, of course it's going to be harder for you to look at the situation and go, we shouldn't be there. And I think the media and both parties, but more the Republican Party, but both parties have done a job where it's just kind of like, if you question, you know, what our troops are doing, you are an awful human being. You are un-American. And it's like, I can separate the two. Like, people have to be able to separate the two. And it's okay to, like, say, hey, like, my husband, my wife's in the military, but they're not fighting for my freedom. Like, that's not an insulting thing to say. It's a realistic thing that people have to come to the conclusion where it's just like, yo, the people who were in Afghanistan for 20 years, like, they weren't there fighting for your freedom. Like, they just weren't. And that doesn't diminish the fact that they weren't brave for signing up for the military. That doesn't diminish the fact that they, you know, it takes a lot of fucking guts for someone to stand up and go, you know, I'm gonna go across the world to do something. And if they're in their hearts, they think they're fighting for freedom, in their hearts, whatever the reasons were, that takes a lot of bravery in my mind.
Listen,
but it doesn't change the fact that they weren't there fighting for freedom. It doesn't change the fact that they weren't there being used as political pawns by our fucking politicians. Yeah. It is what it is. And we have to stop this blind hero worship of our troops, or else we're never going to come to the realities of the situation that we're in these fucking places that we shouldn't be in. The longer that we, like, idolize the U.S. military, the easier it is for politicians to do these things over our heads, because they can always justify, like, oh, well, you don't love America, you don't love the troops. No, like, you can do both at the same time. You absolutely can. You
but
can,
it's a part of the truth.
Yeah.
No, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but it's a grift, man. All of it is a grift, right? Like, it's a part of the game that politicians have sold you on. It's identity politics. I mean, this has ties to identity politics, right?
Yes.
Because again, it's about deflecting. It's about deflecting from the real issue and the real problem and making it about, well, you don't care about troops because you dare say something, you know,
exactly,
whatever. Well, no, like, listen, I served in the army for 5 years. I didn't fight for anybody's fucking freedom. You think I was in Iraq fighting for freedom? No, I was trying to get a paycheck and I was trying to make something of myself and go to college for free. Not for free, but you know what I mean? Like, try to go to college. Like, right. You know, that's what I was doing. And along the way, you know, if somebody wants to thank me for their service, I appreciate it. Great. But I didn't do anything. Look, real heroes don't consider themselves heroes. They don't call themselves hero. They just do it.
Yeah. But
they just do it.
Yeah, you do. But then you also have people who are signing up for the military because they want to be heroes.
And sure. There's part of that. There's in any profession, there's that hero worship aspect to it, but you know that's always going to be a thing. You're never going to escape that, man. I'm talking about the real men and women that just do this shit and, you know, don't get any credit. You never hear their names on the news, instead, unless they're in a pine box, or when we want to give them a 2-minute standing ovation at a game, when we prop them up, then we'll wheel their asses out there in uniform. And yay, we care about our troops, even though we vote for politicians who want to fund the military industrial complex and, you know, prop up lies and propaganda and whatever. But, you know, it's angering, man. It's angering because I, like I said, I think about all the lives that were impacted on both sides. All the men and women that lost their lives, that family members, families that were wrecked, people that came back with PTSD. PTSD is such an ugly, sad thing, man. And how many of our soldiers, how many of our men and women came back with PTSD, fucked up in the head, dying for help? For what? For a fucking government that we propped up, that we spent $2 trillion training and equipping and, you know, enabling to quit. And I'll say it, quit in 17 days. Just don't seem right, man. And then I got a media telling me that basically I'm wrong for applauding this, wrong for cheering this, you know? Nah, man. And listen, like I said, I gave Biden credit because it took guts to have that speech, to do what he did, because Biden could have pulled back. Biden could have reneged and he could have been back to, you know, interventionalism and, oh, well, we got to keep the troops there. See, it's been a disaster. He could have succumbed to the media pressure. He didn't. He kept by it. That's a guts. And I'm not a big Joe Biden fan. And Joe Biden has blood on his hands too. But for this week, for this particular thing, I give him credit. Now, the cynical aspect of me will tell you that, yeah, he's just doing this so he can go bomb another country.
Right.
That's a part of the story too.
Right.
Of course. And if you have that thought process, you are well within your right.
Yeah.
But I'll give him credit. It took guts because Obama did do this shit. And Obama ran on getting us out of Afghanistan and Iraq. Obama didn't do this shit.
He did.
You know?
That's for sure he did.
Think about that. The president that we all hate and loathe with our passion, he did the one thing Bush couldn't do. He did the one thing Obama couldn't do. He did the one thing. He got us out of Afghanistan. Trump gets credit too here. I know people want to hate Trump. I can't stand the guy either. He's a fucking moron. But he at least had enough wherewithal to at least start the fucking process.
Right.
And listen, did he have his own agendas? And he hired John Bolton too, so he gets no high marks here either. He's got blood on his hands too, just by association. But at the very least, we're fucking done with this war, man. We're done. It needed to happen. It's 20 years. It's far too long. We both can agree on that. A lot of lives were lost. A lot of money was spent. A lot of money that could have gone to other things, Medicare for all. But, you know, and honestly, I beg, and I'm talking to the listeners. I'm talking to whoever's out there that's watching us right now. I'm talking to you, man. I hope that you learn from this. You learn from history and you learn of the ugliness and the horrors of war. People say they know, but they don't really truly know. They don't know because it doesn't affect you. If it doesn't touch you, if it doesn't affect you directly, you don't know. You just see what's on the news and, oh, it sounds bad and it's horrible, but you don't really know until it affects you. Learn from this. Learn. And I challenge politicians to learn from this. They won't. It's wishful thinking, but to learn from this. And these logistic experts too that think that, you know, ending a war is just as easy as just pressing a button. Listen, no war has ended easily. Even World War II, which we've lionized and, you know, propped up there as this great achievement in American democracy. And in a lot of respects it is, but, you know, even World War II ended ugly. You know, Europe was blown half to hell and we gave half of it to the fucking Russians and started a Cold War. Did that end? In a great way. Korea is still at war. People don't realize that the Korean War is still going on. It's just at a ceasefire at any given moment. Hell, we could be having this conversation right now and that war will pop off any given moment. Still going. It's still a civil war. No war has ended pretty. None. So any idiot, so don't let these assholes on TV tell you that, you know, I would have done that. No, you wouldn't have. Any president, Republican, libertarian, conservative, progressive, any president that tried to do it the same way would have ran into the same issues.
Yep.
That's it. Yeah, man. It's sad. And I hated seeing what I saw this week. I hated seeing the horrific footages of people, you know, at that airport, people getting left behind, of interpreters not knowing what their status were. I mean, those people are dead. They're dead. They're dead if we don't save them. You know,
yeah.
And I hate that. No one, and everybody that's applauding Afghanistan ending, no one's applauding what happened, or no one's saying that this isn't a terrible day. This isn't a celebratory thing. You know, everybody hates what happened, but it was time. It's the best worst option in a lot of ways.
Right.
In a lot of ways. So I just hope we learn from history.
We won't.
We won't. No. I'm sure if podcasts were a thing back in 1975, I'm sure people would have been saying the same thing about, you know, Saigon. This is our Saigon. This is our moment. This will be a generational thing. You'll remember.
You can't, the way the media is, it's not just like the cable news networks. It's also like the newspapers. Like,
yeah, it's like the media in general, the media in general, man. And again, war sells. War sells. You know how many contractors and defense contractors are littered across DC? Everybody knows. It's a grift. Everybody's in on it. And that's why they're upset too. Don't doubt that. That's why they're upset, because they know the grift is up. For now, they know the grift is up.
They'll find
something else. Yeah, they'll find something else.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know. Yeah, man. I don't even think we could follow up anything else with talking.
Nah.
we should just leave it there. We'll just leave it there, man. I pray for those people in Afghanistan. I really do. Hopefully we can get some of those interpreters and those local nationals that helped us throughout these 20 years. We can get them out of country. Hopefully I pray for the people of Afghanistan. I pray for the families and the men and women that fought in this hellacious war. I pray for you guys. And hopefully, like I said, I'll do my part on this show. Hopefully we all do our parts, either at the ballot box or just getting out and through activism, through just talking to prevent another Afghanistan, another Vietnam from happening ever again in our kids' lifetime.
Right.
But that's the best thing we can do, because politicians are not going to do it. The media is not going to do it. The military industrial complex is not going to do it. They're not going to end their own grift. So we got to do it. That's our responsibility. So hopefully we heed to that, but I doubt it. I doubt it. All right, man. It's enough trying to save the world for 1 week.
We did our best.
Yeah, we did our best. But yeah, man, if you like conversations like this and then you like discussions like this, I mean, obviously not every week will be as deep and as personal as this one, but if you like more of this, you know, subscribe to our YouTube page, man. Any Given Sunday Podcast on YouTube. You're watching us here live, so subscribe and hit that like button and subscribe and leave a comment. You know, obviously follow the podcast and subscribe to the podcast on all platforms. We're available everywhere: Spotify, Apple, everywhere. Everywhere you can find podcasts for free on the internet, we're there. And then, of course, go follow the show on Twitter at AGSPod on Twitter, AGSPodcast on Instagram, Any Given Sunday on Facebook. Yeah, go check us out. Go support. Again, leave us a review. Let us know how we're doing. You know, it's important to the show. It helps us continue to do what we do best. So, yeah, definitely. And then, of course, go follow me on Twitter at TheEmmanuelBrown, Instagram, TheEmmanuelBrown, Emmanuel Brown on Facebook, all that good stuff. Josh, you got anything for the listeners before we get out of here?
Follow me on Instagram, Twitter, at Josh_Rodriguez_. Yeah, that's it. I mean, all my other podcasts are on hiatus right now, so I'll let you know when they come
back. Yeah. And also go make sure you check out all the slew of podcasts that we have on the Dead End Podcast Network. Go check out Dead End Sports, which I'm on. I haven't been on in the last couple of weeks, but I'll make my triumphant return here soon. Also, go check out MLBBro.com. Go check out all the stuff we have going on there. Yeah, just go support, man. If you like content, if you like podcasts and stuff, just, you know, go check these things out, man. I think we do a really good job. Josh on his side of things, me on my side of things, we do a really good job. So yeah, definitely go check that out. But yeah, enough saving the world for one day. We are out of here. For Josh Rodriguez, I am Manny Brown. This has been Any Given Sunday, episode 84. We are out of here. Peace. Mm-hmm.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.